Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Record. Okay, we're ready to go.
Ladies and gentlemen, today and today only, I welcome you to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. Yes, the one place where you can ask questions and actually get answers. Maybe you've noticed that sometimes you can post a question to the Facebook or to the Twitter or whatever the kids are on and people don't respond. Here, we actually respond because we're a hub, an online hub for multiplying churches. We love multiplying churches. Daniel M. loves multiplying churches. He's up in Canada now, loving multiplying churches. Ed Stetzer, that's me, in Chicago, loves multiplying churches. And here at newchurches.com, you're going to find the resources that you need, yes, you do, to get started, as well as a community of experts who care for you, who want to encourage you, who want to provoke you to love and good deeds to help you thrive as a church planter or a multi-site pastor. So welcome to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. Now, come on, how was that?
Okay, so, yeah, no, that was
epic.
A minute long. It sounded like I was about to watch a WWE, you know.
Like let's WWE get ready to rumble!
A wrestling match. But you know what, Ed? I liked that intro. The thing that stood out to me most was how much energy you had when you did it. Like, for people who know you, when do you have that much energy? Like, you sounded legitimately
excited. I have a lot of energy.
Excited.
Well, I'm like Jeb Bush, low energy Jeb, as a certain person called him. Yeah. I have lots of energy. Are you implying I have low energy? I think I may have low energy because you make me do 9 of these podcasts at a time. I start with high energy and you drain it out of me.
Yeah. So, Ed, I think on your website, edstetzer.com, it should be Ed with an exclamation mark at the end. Ed!
Yeah. Like Jeb. I love it.
Yes.
I love it.
Ed!
No, actually, be fair. Just so you know, I know Jeb Bush, and he's got plenty of energy. He's I was just with a pastor who shall remain unnamed that he and I had a meeting with Jeb. And just left thinking this guy's got lots of energy, lots of ideas. And so I don't want to say bad things about Jeb Bush, but you know, you just said I had low energy. It's the only thing that come to mind. So,
all right. Okay. Well,
all right. But on to Sleepy Daniel now. Sleepy Daniel. All right. Go ahead, Daniel.
Sleepy. Low, are you trying to brand me as Sleepy now?
Exactly.
Oh man. Okay. So today we have a great question. This is a,
it's as great as my introduction. It's yes. Hard to match and that. Maybe we should just stop at the introduction and go to closing. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. All right. Now we'll listen to the question. Go ahead.
Okay. Now before I hit play. Okay. Listeners. At Ed Stetzer on Twitter or at Daniel Sanghi on Twitter, tag us and let us know what you think about this episode and about about Ed's intro.
Let us know what you think about Todd. Just tell us, what do you think about Todd? I got questions about Todd as well.
Yeah, that would work too. All right, let's listen in.
So my question is, if you live in a town that has had many churches, but most of the churches are dead, or have gone the extremely liberal route, how does one go about trying to plant a biblically faithful church in that context? And I guess the second part of it would be, do you think it's beneficial to begin with more of an at-home Bible study house church model and as it grows, expand, or start directly with a location of sorts and a launch team?
I'd like to answer that one. You should send out a mailer and say, hey, you churches that have gone liberal and are dead, we're here. And
hey, you want to experience a church done differently? One that's never been.
They're not liberal. Of course, the question is what does he define as gone liberal? That could be like, depending upon how conservative you are, that could be like the Assemblies of God or the Southern Baptists, right? It's the Wesleyans have gone liberal.
Okay, that is fascinating. Because even if you look at complementarianism and egalitarianism, right? There are some who might think that egalitarians are liberal.
Yeah, and there are certainly some egalitarians that are liberal and some complementarians that are liberal for that matter.
Exactly. Yeah, that's not the line, but that's a really good distinguishing point.
Yeah, so let's assume that he's, in broadly speaking, about evangelical, and that he wants to plant an evangelical church, probably a conservative evangelical church, and sees a lot of denominations in that town. And again, this would not be, I mean, come walk with me downtown Chicago. I mean, this is a real thing. We churches do. Oh, yeah.
All through Canada too.
Yeah, theologically move and theologically drift. So that's a real thing. We know it's a real thing. So the question is, what do you do when there's an overwhelming preponderance of such churches? And how do you deal with that situation? Because, I mean, partly you're going to have to create some distinguishing factors between you and ultimately them. And part of that is to say that, you know, you might even say, you know, use the words. I mean, I don't find it particularly helpful to say these other people are bums. You know, even if that person who asked may think that, I would use terms that kind of say, hey, you know, we're excited to be able to start a Bible believing church. To be a Bible believing church, I wouldn't even say to be the only Bible believing church in town. I would just say, you know, we're a Bible believing church, and this is what we hold to. And I would then evangelize, and just evangelizing. I mean, again, depending upon what he means by liberal church, you know, a lot of churches in some traditions have moved away from the idea of conversionary Protestantism that used to be what drove them maybe 100 years ago. So, you know, I would just kind of say, here's who we are. Rather than focus on who they are, here's who we are. The distinction will be clear to those who are there. And I think the end result is that you'll have a good opportunity to see people, you know, respond to who you are as a church that holds evangelical beliefs and practice.
That's a good word. When you think about the question that he asked, right? I mean, he's asking, a lot of churches have gone liberal. How do you plant a church that's biblically based? So I guess the thing that popped out to me most when I heard the question was, hey, what do you do when all these other churches who say their churches, you know, they don't hold up to the inerrancy of Scripture and to the authority of the Bible, especially because he said biblically based. But I would actually say to him and to everyone else as well, there's probably more churches that you can work with than you might think in your town. Because there are some people who definitely think, oh, we can only work with the same denomination. But as we've worked with the Church Planting Leadership Fellowship community, I mean, we were just together, right, Ed, up at Wheaton last month, and there were 65 plus different church planting organizations, denominations and networks that are a part of learning about Hispanic planting when we released the research around that and talked about, okay, what does it look like for us to continue to plant churches that reach Latinos in North America? Not just Latinos, but that was the focus of that particular gathering. And there was not everyone was on the same page theologically. We all agreed with the Lausanne Covenant. We all agreed that we're broadly evangelical, yet there are probably several churches in all of our different denominations that wouldn't actually work with the other ones. But when you sit down, have coffee, you'd actually realize you have more in common than not.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I think again, but I'm going to take him at his, I mean, liberal's a thing. It's a thing. Yeah. Machen writes about, you know, Christianity and liberalism. And so, you know, I'm going to take him. I mean, I don't think anybody in our room that we had, they're affirming the Lausanne Covenant. So they're not going to identify in that same way. So I think he's probably talking about, you know, post the mainline shift that many have experienced. And that's multiple levels. So again, taking kind of at that description, I think the key is just plant a church, do evangelism. That is distinguishing enough, and you can communicate your values from there. And I think ultimately people will get it and respond accordingly. Now, again, we had a little fun at the beginning to know what that might mean. But at the end of the day, I think just listening to the heart of the question is, and making the assumption that our call is to, you know, kind of tend our own garden, plant our own field, plant a biblical church in that community, that'll make the bigger difference than necessarily speaking up or pushing other people.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And just to clarify what I was talking about, I was talking about, hey, what would it look like for an Assemblies of God pastor to work with an Anglican Church in North America pastor? Right. And not to see each other as opponents, or not to even see each other as having gone off the deep end, but realize the similarities that there are between the two. But beyond that, I agree with you, Ed, that there's I love the approach of, rather than saying, hey, This is those people have it wrong instead of focusing your advertising, marketing, everything else around that. And even in your church planting prospectus and when you have conversations with others, instead of bashing others, just strongly communicate what your values are and what the vision of your church is, and let them decide. Let them see what's more compelling in that manner.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And at the end of the day, you know, it's let God sort out the you know, the wheat and the chaff. You know, the sheep and the goats. And I do recognize that there are some churches that theological beliefs will be so outside that you wouldn't necessarily see them as partners in a lot of different ways. So I get that, and I live that. I totally understand. And I think the challenge is how then do we respond? Well, probably we just, again, tend our own garden, plant our church, evangelize, and go from there.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. All right, let's hear a quick word from our sponsor today, and then we'll hit the second part of the question. Just a quick word from our sponsor for today, and we'll get back into the episode. Do you ever feel like you don't know where to start with volunteer training? Or if you do, is it hard to get everyone in the same place at the same time? Well, Ministry Grid makes it simple to train every volunteer and leader in your church. With a library of over 3,500 videos and 800 courses, you'll find training for every ministry area and leadership level. From volunteers to leaders to ministry directors, Ministry Grid's scope and sequence of training makes it easy to know who needs what training. And here's the best news of all. For the month of August, you can get unlimited access to Ministry Grid for your entire church for just $399 a year. And every year after that, you're locked into that price. If you want to take advantage of this incredible deal, just go to ministrygrid.com/podcast to get unlimited training for $399. Once again, that's ministrygrid.com/podcast. Now let's get back to the interview. All right, so there's that, right? Would you suggest in this context to start with a home-based Bible study, to do multiple small groups like you've suggested in previous podcasts and also in planting missional churches, or to, in this context, start with a location and a launch team?
Nah, I would probably still start the normal way, and it is kind of a normal way.
Okay.
It's you know, it's starting with small home groups and go from there. So I think that for all of us, you know, it's kind of what I would say is, if there are reasons to go a different path, there's a well-worn path in church planting where you start with small groups and you eventually launch into a church, because that's been helpful. It's worked for a lot of people. So that well-worn path is what people tend to walk. If you have a reason not to walk that well-worn path, I get it. And I think you should say, all right, what's the difference? What's kind of the distinction between the two? And if you find an important distinction, you need to do this a different way, then do it that way. Nothing wrong with that at all. Nothing wrong with that in the slightest. But I would say that his description, you know, again, I planted in Buffalo, New York, and I planted in, you know, in Erie, Pennsylvania. That's, you know, a lot of the post-evangelical, mainline, and others, that's kind of the world. I mean, I'm in Chicago. That's kind of the world. I would still plant that same way. But again, there may be reasons he asked that are deeper than that, that he might see that, you know, how can I reach out? But my only one concern is, if his strategy is, I want to reach out and tell everyone that we're the Bible-believing church and everyone else is not, you could probably peel off some people who are dissatisfied with the theology of their churches. I'm not sure I'm not saying those people don't need a church, but I'm not sure that's the best way to begin. I think a better way to begin is to evangelize people and then to congregationalize them.
Yeah. What I would add on to that is, let's say you are a part of a church in Boston, for example. You know, we're talking about New England here, and you are going to be sent out from a mother church with a launch team, and you have the opportunity to cast that vision to the church and be like, hey, we're going to be planting a church in Connecticut, or we're going to be planting a church in Maine or in Rhode Island, and you're communicating that vision from Boston, from a church that you have relationships with, and you're gathering a launch team to go out from there, to move there and to plant a church, then yeah, I think that would be an instance where you are going out with a launch team. Now you're going to be doing groups and all that out there, but I would definitely encourage you toward that. But if you're looking at more of a secular area and you're saying, okay, we need to plant a church, and you're not being parachuted, you're not being sent out like a mother from a mother church like that, but you're parachuting into a place that you don't know, then I would fully say, oh yeah, start with small groups, because in that context, and especially when a lot of churches have gone liberal, and you're saying that small group context can actually be a very engaging environment where you're doing deeper Bible study and you're looking at theology in a different way than what many other people might be aware of in that context, and doing evangelism out of that too. So I would just say there are definitely a lot of different approaches to launching, but you definitely have to see how you're starting and from what you're starting, you know, what you're starting from.
Yeah, agreed on all counts. I think every situation is different, but you know, walk the well-worn path unless there's a reason to do it otherwise.
Perfect. Well, thanks again for listening in, and we thank you. Yeah, just be sure to check out the Group Answers podcast. Actually, that's a great podcast that's a part of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network family, where they talk all about small groups and group-based ministries. So just look up Group Answers, and you be sure to subscribe to that today. All right, thanks again for listening in. And
I will do the introduction to that podcast as well.
You should do it for all the podcasts on the podcast network, Ed.
I'm going to do all the podcasts in the leadership podcast.
Awesome. Thanks again for listening in.